This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Farmers everywhere will be coping with the impact of carbon taxes, but the impacts might be different depending on the province. We'll have a discussion with two Glacier Farm Media journalists about how this is rolling out. We'll hear about the Canadian Food Grains Bank receiving national recognition for its effectiveness. But first, relief spread across Canada's export-oriented agriculture sectors when news broke that the CPTPP had passed through Parliament and received royal assent. This is how Gary Storti of the Canadian Pork Council reacted to the news that the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership had in fact been passed in Canada.
Well, this place is Canada, and specifically in our interest, the hog producers in a good position. You know, this the fact that this piece of legislation passed through both levels of the, the House of Commons and the Senate efficiently is absolutely fantastic. You know, when you look at other bills or other pieces of legislation, sometimes they can take several months, if not years, and frankly, not even appear at all. You finish it all. So when, in this particular situation, you know, there's a great deal of credit that has to go to all the elected officials in the House of Commons, as well as participants in the Senate, to work together within their own rules to see this deal be passed through and get royal assent.
Storti said this Asia-Pacific trade deal could lead to major increases in pork exports.
Well, for what that does is it allows us, you know, we're part of the team that implements this deal. You know, there's no question about whether Canada is going to be part of the CPTPP or when. For our sector and as an industry, it does allow us to have this first mover advantage in some of the countries that are part of the deal and have to deal with those tariff reductions. So for pork industry, we have a very strong presence in Japan. It's an important market. It's been regularly $1 billion in sales annually. So with CPTPP, you know, we will maintain potentially maintain that foothold because we're part of this deal, and no other competitor is going to at this point undercut a tariff rate. But we're also going to see some of the tariffs in Japan change. You know, we're going to see some tariff reductions on pork, and within the first year, we'll see a savings of about $51 million. And in addition to that, because of some of the rate cuts, we could see an additional $600 million in pork sales moving forward because of new cuts, perhaps, or new products entering into the Japanese market alone.
Jeff Nielsen, the president of Grain Growers of Canada, was also delighted.
Yeah, I think, well, we're extremely excited and extremely impressed that it has moved as fast as it did. And I want a big shout out to the Senate for really working up fast on this, getting it to the point where we did finally get royal assent yesterday. And now, in a few days, we'll be able to officially ratify it, and we will be one of the first six signatories on this new CPTPP.
Combined with access gains from the Canada-EU deal and the renegotiated NAFTA deal, farmers face a much more open international market than just a few years ago.
Just, it gives us a year advantage, a year to get some headway into some of these markets, and a big step inside the door. You're looking at, it's just the overall extent of this deal when you look at 11 countries, and I think it's over $13 trillion worth of global gross domestic GDP. I can't see what that means right now. Gross domestic product, right?
Now we turn to carbon taxes, which all Canadian farmers will be dealing with in some way soon. John Gregg of FarmTerrio and Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator join us now to talk about this. Hello, gentlemen, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi there.
Hi, Ed.
So how will this affect farmers on your side of the country? John, let's start with you.
Well, we've been operating in Ontario under a cap-and-trade system for a couple of years already, so the trick will be basically sorting out what might be affected and what might not be affected. The real difference that people on farms will see is that the cap and trade system kind of operated at a higher level, and there wasn't necessarily direct immediate effects that farmers would necessarily see. They would have been affected by pricing changes based on carbon-based, you know, fuels and such in the past, but with the new carbon regime and tax system now imposed by the federal government, we will they'll now see more direct impact on, you know, as they go along. So the cap and trade system was recently canceled by the new Conservative government here, so it's no longer in effect. So we'll now be dealing with the imposed federal system that the rest of the several of the other provinces are going to have to deal with as well. So and farmers are still trying to figure out what that's going to mean. There's some questions on, you know, how are grain dryers affected. There's a lot of talk about vehicles and exemptions for vehicles, but there didn't seem to be a lot of mention of fuels that will go into grain dryers. And then the other issue in Ontario that they're still they're scratching their heads a bit about is greenhouse operators ended up with an 80% exemption for fuels used to heat greenhouses. But we have a lot of barns, hog barns, poultry barns especially, that use a lot of fuel to heat those barns in the winter too, and there wasn't any exemption there. So there's some questions about why do indoor plant growing operations get some exemptions, but livestock farmers did not.
And was cap and trade affecting how people actually farmed it? Did it affect certain operations, or was it just more of a general level of cost situation?
So anyone who used more fuel would have been more affected. So there certainly was concern about what it meant to people who were running grain dryers on propane especially, and then on natural gas as well. And then anyone that used fuel, there wasn't really a fuel exemption. So anyone that used fuel in your tractors, you know, that fuel cost, it was just part of the cost of when you bought regular gas or diesel. It was part of the cost. So it was maybe more broadly focused than the new one, but I don't think there'll be, as far as the bottom line cost to the sector, I'm not sure there'll be a huge difference overall between the two different systems.
Did anyone do anything different?
So, you know, I don't think a whole lot of people did a whole lot different. And, you know, that's part of the challenge for agriculture, is that there aren't a lot of simple alternatives to the fuels you need. If you're going to run a tractor, you know, there aren't that many hydrogen powered tractors. There aren't very many solar powered. You know, I understand there is a solar powered tractor or two around, but they're not going to electric tractors around. But they aren't going to produce. They're not going to haul a good sized planter or a green buggy or anything. So you really do need those fossil fuels to run your trucks and your machinery. That said, there has been certainly movement over the years to in those livestock barns. So poultry barns, there are quite a few that have installed hot air recirculation systems, heat recovery systems, so that they capture the heat being expelled by fans for air circulation out of the poultry barns, and then they recapture that heat and put it back in. One of the newer things in the last few years has been the variable speed motors. So those motors then allow they're much more energy efficient. So there has been some innovation in that area, but as far as broad-based all farmers going, okay, we're going to switch to doing this, I don't think it had that much of an effect.
And Alan, what's the situation out west where it seems like a bit of a mixed bag right now?
Well, I think we're going to, the farmers I talk to say it's really not going to make any difference in how they farm. Even up to $50 a ton, it's just such a relatively small price relative to the price fluctuations they see in other expenses. Like, for example, nitrogen can be $1,000 a ton, has been, I think, in the past, or close to it, and now it's maybe closer to $600. So, and same with the price of fuel, the sort of normal variation in fuel prices varies way more than the carbon tax does. So it's unlikely you're going to see very much change in how farmers produce crops.
And farmers rely on a lot of services and a lot of inputs, and they might be affected more since they don't have those exemptions, I'm thinking of people like the trucking industry, obviously fertilizer you were just referring to, grain drying on farm, grain transportation, and then the heating issue. Is this impact big enough to change how those industries, services, and inputs are used or operate from what you've heard?
Yeah, the people I'm talking to don't think it will. It's going to add cost, but with respect to the per unit cost, it's gradually going up. So the natural fluctuation in fuel prices is more than the annual increase in the carbon tax. So it's the feeling is that it's not, might have more impact on individual homeowners, because looking at a new replacing a natural gas water tank, for example, if you look at that over the course of time and then compare that with electricity, there might be over time, if you have to replace the hot water tank anyway, you might be better to go, in Manitoba at least, with electricity, which obviously the carbon tax doesn't apply to. But in terms of these farm operations where you're dealing with thousands and thousands of dollars, it's $50 a ton, starting off at $20 in 2019, is unlikely to have much material impact on what farmers do.
And what are you hearing in Ontario, John, about any sort of way to, I guess, adapt your operations in some way? If there is going to be additional costs, how can you maybe find some efficiencies to mitigate that?
Well, I think the challenge is where can you actually find any of those? Because a farmer isn't actually going to have a lot of control over the overall cost from this that comes down to them. So, as you follow your point you made, that the perhaps the larger impact will be on the services and the commodities that go into a farm, like fertilizer, and farmers will have no ability to really manage that unless they find ways of reducing fertilizer. And I'd just go back to Alan's point that I think the overall price fluctuation of inputs is significantly larger than what the carbon tax will do. Now, and the bigger thought and concern is on is our price of electricity, which is quite high, highest in Canada. So that's actually more of a driver of energy innovation here than I think a carbon tax will be on kind of those fossil fuel sides, just because you know, the electricity cost has gone up significantly over the last 5 years, 10 years here, and it's a serious line item for people that are moving, you know, moving grain or managing you know, operations where they use quite a bit of electricity. So yeah, electricity is more of a driver of energy innovation, I think, here than the carbon tax will be. And yeah. I think if you look at the fact you know, they're looking at some sort of broader exemption for rural people because they don't have transportation alternatives, for example, because for the farmers too, there just aren't that many alternatives other than just incremental. There's no large scale improvements in efficiency. It's more incremental improvements, if anything.
I was going to say too, Ed, like on fertilizer, that potentially could be a bigger hit for farmers because of the impact of the price of cost production of nitrogen. Although economists are quick to point out that there's really no relationship between the cost of production of nitrogen and what farmers pay. Usually, it's sort of more what the market will bear. But that being said, the feds have a program, a part of their carbon tax, looking at the output type of, again, kind of linked a bit to cap and trade. So there, it sounds like big emitters will have some sort of output pricing that will provide discounts and so on for those that are under sort of what's considered the industry norm for that particular emitter, and there could be some, you know, trading of carbon credits and that sort of thing. So there may be some mitigation on the fertilizer side and things like that for big emitters. But the details haven't been worked out. Manitoba also had in its carbon tax plan this output pricing schedule for big emitters that was going to maybe help mitigate or at least provide some options, some flexibility for those emitters.
Right. Well, I guess it'll be a while before we see how this all rolls out in the real world on the farm level and see if farmers can find a way to you know, find some efficiencies to deal with a little bit of the increased cost. So, well, thank you to both of you for joining us here today. Thanks for your insight from your parts of the country.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ed. Take care.
Alan Dawson is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. John Gregg is editor of Farm Terrio. The Canadian Food Grains Bank received some great news this week. It has made it to the top 10 list of effective charities as assessed by Charity Intelligence, an organization that assessed 125 charities collecting donations in Canada. It says charities like the Food Grains Bank achieve $6 worth of good for every dollar they receive, which is a lot better than the average of $1 to $2. Here's how Musu Taylor Lewis of the Food Grains Bank explained to me what this news means for her organization.
So what it represents is Charity Intelligence basically reviews charities in all sectors across Canada annually to see which charities provide basically the most bang for the buck for every dollar that's donated or programmed, how much of an impact that charity has on its recipients and on its society. And what they're saying is that Food Grains Bank provides high value for a dollar, for each dollar donated.
And I guess for you as an organization, what does that mean internally when you're ranked that way?
For us as an organization, it's just really such a wonderful affirmation for us of the work that we're doing. Our donors just, you know, most of them, though many of them do go overseas, most of them never see the work we do, and so we're just always so conscious of the trust they're placing in us. So to have a third party confirm that the work we're doing and the standards that we are imposing upon our programs and upon all the partners that we work with are making a big difference for the beneficiaries of our programs is just really... just really confirming for us, and it's an affirmation for our donors and for the trust that they placed in us as an organization, as a place that they choose doing the good that they want to do in the work.
Yeah, I was going to say that it must be nice for you to be able to turn to your supporters and people you would like to be supporters, and to be able to point out that you are, you know, you've an independent source has found you to be an effective.
Exactly what I'm saying. Basically, you know, they're trusting us based on what we said, but for us to say, look, somebody else has confirmed it based on independent and objective look at what we're doing and what other charities are doing is just wonderful for us.
I asked Taylor Lewis what the Food Grains Bank is doing to actually make sure it is accountable and able to explain what it's doing with its money and what it is achieving with that money.
One of the things we've been thinking about as we found this out is just we just really have high standards for reporting, and so we're aware that part of the reason that we're an independent source is able to assess what we do is because we require all our partners who implement our projects to report at a very high standard, and we want to know how the food we're providing is impacting people, how it's improving the variety of their diets, and we monitor these things very closely, and so we're grateful to see that that work of monitoring is not just improving our programming, improving the lives of the people that we're helping, but that it allows for this kind of recognition of our work.
I was speaking with Musu Taylor Lewis of the Canadian Food Grains Bank. This is Between the Rows. Now we turn to the markets. Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service joins us now to fill us in on what's happening. Hi, Ashley, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
So we still seem to have a bit of a messy harvest going on. What's going on in the markets, and how is harvest affecting that?
Well, of course, this has been a really interesting fall, I guess is a nice way to put it, but really things have been behind schedule since September. It was kind of funny, we saw that really dry and hot summer, and then in September it was like Mother Nature just flipped the switch and we did a complete 180 and we went cold and wet and snowy, and we just suddenly harvest kind of came to a standstill across the province. But last week we started to see a bit better of a news story, and it was that's when we saw a lot of harvest progress done. And it was actually there was a lot of weeks we were here in the office, we were writing up the provincial crop reports as they came in, and it was maybe 1% progress for like 6 weeks or something. But last week we saw extreme, really, really good harvest progress. When the Saskatchewan crop report came out on Thursday, it had that as of October 21st, there was 92% of the crop done, and canola was at 90%, and that was up substantially for both from the previous week. Alberta was another good news story on Friday when we saw that 78% of the crop was harvested, which was up substantially. They were really one of the hardest hit with the cold and snowy weather across the prairies, and then the canola crop there was 70% harvested, and Manitoba, we just got their latest crop report yesterday, which is their last of the year, and it showed that we're almost completely done harvest here, and canola is almost completely in the bin. So it's been a bit better story, and with that, last week the market, the last couple of weeks, the market has kind of been bouncing around a narrow trade. We've been seeing deliveries up, and also we've just been seeing a lot more good news, but there is still some concern about the canola crop that we're going to be getting off the fields that is, well, a lot of the farmers have off the fields now. But I was talking to a trader who also farms a bit himself, and he said with the numbers that we're seeing for deliveries, elevators don't take a wet crop, so that must be dry, so we shouldn't be too worried. There is a crop there.
Yeah, are deliveries going to be delayed and dragged out beyond what people would want to be doing because of as you just mentioned, the wet situation and the variable quality situation?
I'm not hearing that much. So I'm actually hearing that we're having record deliveries. It's been really busy for a lot of places. I know even just talking with feed grain buyers especially, because a lot of the wheat crop has been downgraded. Their phones 2 weeks ago were ringing off the hook. They can't believe how busy they are. But I know with canola, actually last week, when the Canadian Grain Commission data came out on Friday, it showed that 636,500 tons of canola was delivered to elevators last week, which actually is, I think I remember reading somewhere that that's the largest single week delivery in 2 years. So the thing is, with this delayed harvest, producers now are really rushing to get some cash. And we could, from what I was hearing from talking to traders, after we see this initial rush to sell the crop, we could see a lot of farmers slowing down and not see a lot of sales again until the new year.
People have their cash in hand, and then they'll be managing the crops that need better treatment, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they'll be playing the market a bit more and not having to rush to get that money, so they can maybe wait it out and get the price they want.
So are those big deliveries part of why there's been a bit of a hit on canola futures?
Yeah, definitely. That's been weighing on the market. Last week, actually, it's been it's kind of sad when you're looking at the prices, I'm sure, for farmers. We've seen quite a bit of drop. The market has been quite down lately. Last week especially, we saw the January contract hit a session low, below 490. But for the week, it never settled below 490, although now the story's a bit different. I was just looking at the market before I got on the phone, and the January contract is currently below that 490 market, around 488 per ton, which isn't what I'm sure farmers want to see. But I know I was also just talking to a trader, and he was saying we're still pretty relatively high priced when you look at us compared to other oil seeds. So there isn't a lot of support right now, from what I'm hearing, for the market to go up for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, maybe this is the time for the harvest lows, if we're hopeful.
Yeah, that's. I think I got my fingers crossed for the farmers there that this is the harvest lows.
So as we always do these days in market reports, we have to talk about Donald Trump. The trade war with China seems to not cool down. It seems to heat up. Are you seeing actual impacts in the markets from all the rhetoric and the actions that just keep piling on here?
Yeah, definitely, because, of course, the canola market is influenced by the soybean market, and soybeans are a really big player for the agriculture industry when it comes to this trade war between the U.S. and China. I know a lot of the time lately we've been waiting to see if supposed meeting between Trump and his counterpart in China, the Chinese president, is going to happen at the upcoming G20 summit in Argentina. And there is supposed to be a meeting between the two, but from what we've heard, there's not supposed to be a lot of trade talks in it. However, this morning, or late last night, I'm not sure when it exactly came out, but now the U.S. is, of course, wants to put some more tariffs on China if this meeting between the two doesn't go well. And then also there's some other news that just came out this weekend. China is setting themselves up so that they don't have to be as reliant on the U.S. when it comes to soybeans. They just passed new legislation, or whatever it's called. They're saying to limit the amount of soybean use that'll be needed for the protein content for animal feed. So that should mean that they won't need as much U.S. soybeans. So there's definitely a lot going on between those two. And when we see that stuff happen, we've been seeing the soybean market down substantially a lot in the last few weeks. And with that, of course, drags on our canola market here, because we're all the oil seeds are tied when it comes to marketing.
Well, thanks, Ashley, for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Ashley Robinson of Commodity News Service. That's it for this week. I'm Ed White, and I thank you for joining us on Between the Rows. Make sure to join us again next week.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers, aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.